Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the control operator for this, the Limewark Technical Net. It's been going on for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios, and we exchange information. We learn from each other. We teach each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And once again, I thank you all for coming back here for another Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a moment, and when I return, I will give you the usual links. If you wish to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions or TechNet puzzles. We're always looking for interesting technical puzzles to stimulate conversation. Or if you have an expertise in a technical field that's in the news and you'd like to share it with us, or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder, you saw something space or NASA related and you'd like to hear his take, you can directly email him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you wish to contact me, you can address it to mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as most of you know, I keep up a link page. I cut and paste interesting articles and such throughout the week, and I put it up on my webpage, and you can access it at any time and read the interesting articles. The way to get to it is type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. We also maintain a chat room. Sometimes it's busy, a lot of times it's quiet, but you can get to it by typing into the browser chat.ac2gs.com. Also, we stream this technical net on the Internet, and I keep the connection live for the entire week. So if you want to listen to the Glen Oaks repeater, but you don't have a radio available, you can type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you the audio stream. Also, I'd like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of this technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys. Their wisdom persists in the audio tapes available on that website. So keep that in mind. Anyway, those are the links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I got planned. Another standard operating technical net. I have a couple of things to say at the top of it, but once that's over and done, we will ask for questions and comments and topics of a technical nature. Specifically, the early ones hopefully will be amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio repeater and the net. But we will entertain any science and or technology questions as best we can. That's the idea. That should take us to approximately 10:15, and Paul will come on WS2N with the SpaceNet report, and that should take us to approximately 11 p.m. when I will return to hopefully tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If everything continues to work, we've had in the years in the past, we've had repeater failures, power failures, computer failures, my shack failures. Just earlier today, my computer decided to forget it had Bluetooth, so I had to convince it that it did. Hopefully it won't act up like that tonight. So that's the game plan. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you my little opening comment. Okay, I kind of titled this Russian Math. Perhaps you have read in the newspaper that when Google went, I think it probably synchronizes with the invasion of Russia's little neighbor, that Google decided that they were showing a lot of propaganda, state-run propaganda on their YouTube channels, and so they kind of terminated it. So the Russians took them to court, and of course the Russian court found in Russia's favor, and finally find them. And Google kind of decided that they weren't going to pay. So the Russian court had an interesting idea. They were going to double the penalty, I think, every day. I'm not quite sure about that, but definitely doubling the penalty. Now, that reminds me of when I was in math class way back in high school, and someone once told me this interesting story about a guy who sold something to someone, and instead of taking cash, he pulled out a chessboard with 64 squares, and he said, I'll tell you what I'll take instead of $500. Put a grain of rice in the first square of the chessboard, and then the next day double it, and then the next day double that, and the next day double that, until you fill up the chessboard with all 64 squares, and then we're even. So the guy kind of said, geez, how much could it be? 1,000, 2,000 grains of rice? I'm getting off cheap. Well, unfortunately, if you do the math, 2 to the 64th is 1 with 19 zeros after it. So that's a lot of grains of rice. So the moral of the story is do the math before you agree to anything. So in light of that, the Russian government apparently thinks that Google owes them the number 2 with 36 zeros after it in rubles. Even though rubles are worth about a penny at this point, it is more wealth than is held in the entirety of the planet Earth. So it only goes to show that doubling things for long enough really adds up. If anyone has any comments, feel free. Yes, Leslie?
Whenever we're talking about demand for something, there is something like a system that is made from tools. What kind of tools Russia has to make of Google to make them pay?
Not quite sure what the question is. The most famous use of two is binary. Pretty much all binary computers are based on two.
No. Legal mechanism. Let's say, I'm telling you that you owe me $1,000, which you don't. And then I go to Russian court, and the Russian court, yes. And we're going to double that money every day if you don't pay. And then we have a astronomical figure. And then there is no legal mechanism that allows me to get the money from you. So my question is, whatever the Russian government says, what kind of mechanism does he have to push Google to pay?
Pretty much none. Little and none, I guess, would be the answer. They're a kind of, illegitimate state at this point. It is only, you know, the access of evil that deals with them. Europe doesn't. China has to kind of watch and be diplomatic. They can't kind of be all in, so they're kind of one foot in, one foot out. So as long as you don't find yourself in Mother Russia, you're probably good. You know, unfortunately, there's always the secret police, the FSB. In the past, they've been known to stroll around Europe killing people who have made Putin their enemy. But he's not going to poison Google. You can't really do that. So my guess is this is just a propaganda ploy. It sounds important to some people, even though, you know, they'll never they won't get a sore buck back. So, you know, they can raise the price to 10 times what it is today, which it will be probably in about 3 or 4 days. But, you know, it's all pointless. It's an exercise in public relations.
So the conclusion would be, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a plenty of Italians coming from Sicilia. And some of them, not all of them, some of them created a an organization, an official organization called Mafia. And making a lot of money, then there was a prohibition. And during that prohibition, Al Capone made plenty of money on it. So there was an informal organization. And imagine that we have a bandit state made of bandits, where regular people who happen to be there suffering, and they are not to be blamed for what is going to run, but they create a bandit state with the bandit government, and they included the whole country in it. Now the bandit state took something from the history. So let's say we have a czar, which is a king, and that king had a crepuscular bravo, which was the law, where all of the agricultural workers were slaves. And it was not much before that was during the 20th century also, at the beginning of 20th century. And then communists came in 1917, and when they came, they invaded the house of the Tsar. They murdered the entire family with children, with servants, and with the pets of the servants. So, after that, there was the Soviet Union. And Soviet Union collapsed in 1990. And then, the new mutant of it took over that Krepasnoye Pravo, that means that state of sort of slavery for the nation. Stated it in mutated form. And now that mutated form requires Google to pay. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right, but let me add a little bit of something that I recently learned, because I thought I knew about the Russian Empire previously, but apparently the Russian Empire kind of thought that it was the Third Rome. The story seems to be that in the beginning, of course, there was good old Julius Caesar and his second nephew, Augustus. And Augustus, of course, founded the Roman Empire. Eventually, they split in kind of two, to an Eastern Roman Empire and a Western Empire. And the Western Empire kind of faded rather fast. The Germans invaded it and just kind of took everything that wasn't nailed down. But the Eastern Empire, which was the capital, was located in Byzantium, survived and thrived for 1,000 years. And so that was thought by people to be kind of the second version of the Roman Empire. Now, when the Turks invaded it and burnt it down and stole everything there, they kind of ran towards Eastern Europe. So they kind of ran to Ukraine, they ran to Belarus, they ran to Russia. And so there were a bunch of clergy and noble types from Byzantium that kind of settled in those areas. And the Roman Empire, the Russian Empire, kind of thinks of themselves as the inheritor of Byzantium. So I never kind of realized that. I should have probably, they call their emperor Tsar, which is just a kind of Russian way of saying Caesar. But, Germans do the same thing. They have the Kaiser, which is a German way of saying Caesar. But nevertheless, I never realized that the Russian Empire thought that they were the Roman Empire and that they were born to rule. So, people have regularly called Russian political structure a kleptocracy, which is being ruled by thieves. Nicer people, I guess, call it an oligarchy, where it's ruled by filthy rich billionaires who steal from each other and kill each other. But it's unfortunate for its citizens who have to kind of pay the price for all this. All the money is stolen, and they live in terrible situations. And now they're being dragged off to Ukraine to be used as cannon fodder, unfortunately. So it's rather sad.
I agree with you. The only thing is that if we're talking about something that is heritage or something that is taken from the past, and somebody decides to continue that tradition, if we go to the savage nations that became the countries before, if there is a savage nation that continue to use savage methods, like, let's say, murdering servants, murdering children of the servants, and murdering pets of the servants and pets of the Tsar, because pets are also those who to be blamed for disappointment of uneducated crowds. And after that we have a Stalin, and the Stalin murdered about 25 million of his own. Hitler didn't do that. So we try to compare that. We're talking about savage methods that didn't disappear, and some of them were still present or are still present in the mutated form that we have today. And of course, Imperium that is right now decided to attack Ukraine. So, I'm not saying that I'm right, I'm just trying to understand what's going on. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, you go back to Catherine the Great, you go back to Peter the Great, you go back to Ivan the Terrible. And the Tsars, generally speaking, were not very nice people either. I don't know how many people they killed, but I'm sure it's a lot of people, give or take. You know, so, unfortunately, I guess if you live in a battered family, you know, where your father beat the hell out of you, unfortunately, the tendency is to grow up to be a guy who beats the hell out of his kids, who then grow up to beat the hell out of their kids, and on and on and on the violence goes. So how it breaks, when it breaks, I don't know, but I certainly hope it does break soon, because life's too short for this kind of nonsense. But, you know, not much I'm going to be doing in Brooklyn here with geopolitics out there.
Thank you very much,
Norman. Okay. Any other comments before we move to the first main segment? Very well. We're open for business. Anyone with questions, topics, comments, what have you, hopefully amateur radio related, but you know, as the night goes on, we'll be open to any kind of discussion. So anyone out there with any of that, please hit the push to talk, give me your first name, give me your call sign, and roughly is a question or a comment, whether it's amateur radio or non-amateur radio.
Thank you, Shane, after everybody.
Okay, Wesley recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Every so often, people kind of say, gee, why don't we talk about amateur radio stuff? And I say, well, why don't you volunteer to bring up a subject? You can offer a question, or you can just want to bring up a topic, or if you want to comment about something. So, again, I leave it open to all you guys. Don't complain if only a few people kind of talk the night away. So if anyone has any questions, comments, or topics, again, hit that push to talk and introduce yourself.
Good evening, caller. This is Ray, K2CYR. Dr. Roy, I just wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on a subject that has been discussed before. It's the nature of propagation from antennas, circular, linear, vertical, etc., etc. What are the disadvantages or advantages of a circular antenna, or antenna that radiates circularly, or an antenna that is what you would call a vertical antenna. Is there a difference, and are there advantages or disadvantages? Back to net control.
KF2CB.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian?
Oh, hi, Roy. This is Brian. Yeah, I just wanted to join in.
Do you have a question or a topic for tonight?
You want me to create one?
You don't have to, but if you do, that would kind of make the night go a little bit easier. You don't have to make up one now, because Ray is already here with a very interesting question. So if you want to, you can possibly, if you think of something, you can tell me, or if you decide you don't have anything for tonight, that's fine.
Do solid-state linears, are they capable of the same output at 120 volts versus 240 volts AC?
Well, yeah, let's wait a little while, unless you're in a rush, and we'll deal with Ray's question first, and we'll get to you. How's that?
Sounds good as always.
Okay, very good. So, Ray, you ask a very interesting question, although I'm left a little bit of a question in my head. You mentioned circularly polarized antennas. Now, there are loop antennas, but their orientation is not a polarized signal. So when you're telling me a circularly polarized antenna, do you mean a legitimately circularly polarized antenna, or did you mean a loop antenna, as opposed to a horizontal straight antenna or a vertical straight antenna?
K2CYR, Raymond in the Bronx. What I meant was the difference between something like a dish, for example. I didn't mean circularly orientated. I just meant physically a antenna. Well, a loop, I guess, will describe that. And, of course, just a straight standing vertical antenna. That's what I meant. QSL?
Okay, so you mean the structural device as opposed to the particular angle that the radiation is polarized at. Okay, yeah, they all have some nuances for themselves. A vertical antenna is much more forgiving of elevation. You can plant a vertical antenna, if you do it right, on the ground, with enough radials to shield the ground reflections. And a vertical antenna tends to have a little bit less background noise than a horizontal antenna. But the problem is that, you need enough space to be able to put up those radials. Whereas a horizontal, like a center-fed dipole, you don't need any further wires. The center-fed dipole is a complete antenna. But for those, you have to give it a bit of elevation. The closer you bring a vertical antenna down towards the ground, the more it reflects back up. And it gives you a very strange antenna that's great for a very nearby conversation, because if you think of it, the radiation pattern of a center-fed dipole near the ground is almost straight up and just kind of bounces off clouds and such, and some people derisively call it a cloud warmer. It's good for local communication if you're in the valley between two hills and you need to contact the people on the two hills. A near-vertical incident skyway is great. Most people, though, would like to propagate a signal far and wide. So most horizontals optimally should be about a half of a wavelength off of the ground so that they're is less reflection and more takeoff angle to go into the horizon. And there's a whole bunch of things. Horizontal antennas, center-fed dipoles, have a little bit of a gain, where verticals are more omnidirectional, you know, 360 degrees around where you plant it. So there's, you know, there's little details. I mean, ultimately, they all kind of operate with the same underlying technology, but the details are a little bit different.
Thank you very much for elaborating on it a little bit. I got confused the last time we discussed it. But I do have a better understanding, and I appreciate you coming back and recognizing my question. This is K2CYR. We'll pass it back on to you, and you could move on to the next subject if you feel like it, but I'm satisfied with the answers there. To yourself.
Okay, Ray, I'm glad to have been of some help, and of course, as always, if you ever have any further questions, you know where to find me.
Thank you for coming back.
Okay, very good, Ray. Brian, you want to discuss what you just mentioned recently? Say again?
Yes, I had my head away from the unit. What were we talking about?
I believe you were asking me whether a solid-state linear amplifier can deal equally with a 120-volt versus a 220-volt outlet. I think that was the question.
Correct, in solid-state use.
Yeah, solid-state linear amplifier.
Correct.
Okay, well, I mean, ultimately, it depends upon the design parameters, because electrical engineer, some can do things that others can't, unfortunately. The benefit of using a solid-state linear amplifier is that the efficiency of the LDMOS solid-state power transistors is better than vacuum tubes. Vacuum tubes are thermal devices, and they inherently need to raise the temperature of the vacuum tube in order to work, and all that heat is dissipated as waste energy. So it's a little bit more difficult to electrically engineer a vacuum tube-based linear amplifier that runs on 120 volts. You probably have to derate it down from its normal maximum when you're operating it at 220 volts, but you can still operate it to one degree or another. It's easier to do this without the derating when it comes to solid-state linear amplifiers. I have a 1.3-kilowatt solid-state expert system, and I plug it into a undedicated 120-volt line, and I can put out as much as 1.3 kilowatts without lights dimming or fuses blowing.
It's a tube amp, correct?
No, this is a solid-state amplifier.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, again, you know, I mean, you can get power out of a vacuum tube linear amplifier. Usually they're designed so that you can swap out the 220-volt plug for a 120, but you'll probably end up derating the power output to a lower wattage.
What was the model number of your rig? I'm sorry, the linear?
Okay, mine is the, let's see, SPE Expert Systems 1.3K-FA.
Is this still being sold?
I believe so. There was a time that they stopped it because I think the modules stopped being produced. But the last time I looked, they seemed to be selling them still. If you can't get the 1.3, they also sell two other models. They sell a 1.5K and they sell a 2.0K.
Do you know their website, Gordon?
I don't remember because they're actually an Italian company. There's an American distributor. It's kind of changed about four times in the last 12, 13 years. I think it's now the distributor is the same guy who bought up the Bug CW keys, but I forget the name. If you look up, if you just look it up, Google it, Expert Systems 1.3K, I'm sure it'll take you directly to the website.
Will do. I appreciate that. Once if you need support or repair.
Yeah, I mean that's why it changed hands. Apparently, they deal with in warranty repairs and such. Thankfully, I've never kind of needed that, but I've talked to a few people who've availed themselves, and they seem to be okay. I mean, like all things, you know, not everyone has a perfect experience. My SDR radio, I've had to send back to the manufacturer four times, but all things being equal, you know, they didn't charge me anything, and it works fine for me. But there are some people who've had to return their Expert Systems a few times. So, you know, your mileage might vary. But mine, knock on wood, has not given me any problems. I don't try and play games with it. I don't try to overdrive it, and it does what I need to do. I spend most of its time on the low setting of 500 watts, but I've boosted it up to the next higher setting without any problems.
The website is called expertamps.com. And main trading company, mtcradio.com, is the reseller.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is kind of... there was one guy who was the distributor when I got interested. By the time I bought it, which was back in the old days, it took a long time. I think I ordered it and got it in some like 6 or 7 months because they were behind in manufacture in Italy. And I still remember in August, apparently, in Italy, they just take a long month off. No matter what, even if they're backed up. So they stopped manufacturing for a month and then started again in September. So, you know, some regional manufacturers have curious habits. But like I said, it worked well. Apparently, if I remember the story right, an Israeli designed the technology and for an Italian company that does the manufacturing. So one guy was a distributor when I was looking for it. By the time I ordered it, another guy had taken over. And I think about a couple years ago, I heard that he had gone into retirement and handed it over to the next guy. So, yeah, that's the nature of things, unfortunately. These small ham companies, you're kind of, you know, in a bit of a problem. At least this is a company. I have other stuff that I bought from mom and pop shops, where you know it's one guy putting these things together and fixing them. And you know if he goes on retirement, you know, and someone like DX Engineering doesn't want to buy it from him, then you're kind of screwed.
That sounds logical. It's expensive. The lowest priced one is $5,000. Wow.
Well, I think there might be an option to buy one without the internal antenna tuner, because I felt that I really didn't need an internal antenna tuner. You know, that was just something to kind of make your package a little bit lighter at the cost. So, you know, that kind of dropped it, for me at least, $1,500, which was, I thought, worth it.
I'm looking. So far, nothing under $5,000,
$6,000. Oh, okay. Like I said, I haven't looked into it lately. Unfortunately, solid-state linear amplifiers cost more than inexpensive vacuum tubes. There's some linears like the stuff that MFJ used to sell and still is selling. Uses vacuum tubes from the previous century, and they cost a lot less than the LDMOS solid-state components. So, a lot of people will buy old MFJ linear amplifiers. But, look around. I think a week or two or three ago, gentleman was discussing mercury linear amplifiers. They're kind of, they seem to be somewhat handmade down in Florida. I have no particular experience with them, but some people say they're very good. So there's a whole bunch of options. A lot of companies are, to my mind, I don't know of any new company or, company that came into existence in the last 20 years that's selling anything but solid state. Vacuum tubes are sort of 20th century technology at this point, unfortunately, for some. Say again? I guess not. Well, Brian, that's the best I can tell you, that, with any kind of model, you always should kind of knock on the manufacturer or distributor's door and just double-check what I said. But I know for a fact that on my 1.3K is perfectly able to operate on a 120-volt non-dedicated line.
Does it use a switching power supply?
Yes. I think most things at this point, unless it's professional or insane, they use a switching power supply. Switching power supplies are much more efficient and smaller. You wouldn't be able to power my linear amplifier using a linear power supply in the form factor that it occupies. It's approximately the size of two shoeboxes put side to side. It would have to be probably twice the size and more than twice the weight if you used a massive transformer and used a linear power supply to power it.
Makes sense. I'm very surprised at the prices that they're getting for linears now. Wow.
Well, inflation and technology. There's unfortunately no cheap source for LDMOS power transistors. So those are the hearts of these things. And of course, because it's a kind of 21st century, they build in all kinds of safety features. These devices check on what the SWR is, and what the power input is, and what the power output is, and they have a whole bunch of alarms and safety features. Although, you could probably look up YouTubes where they've taken LDMOS power modules and shorted them and opened them, and it didn't destroy the modules. You got to do that with vacuum tubes, and you got to buy a new vacuum tube.
Okay, so if I was in the market for a 500 versus a 700 watt amplifier, what would you pick?
I don't know. Offhand, I think I've seen things like 800-watt solid state. I don't recall if I've seen a 500-watt solid state. If you want to save a couple of shekels, you can probably get a MFJ, 500-watt tube-based linear amplifier for significantly less. They're fine as, devices. You might be able to squeak through with 500 watts, but, that would be probably the most you'd get out of a vacuum tube-based linear amplifier, I would think, at 120.
Okay. I just wonder what the signal strength difference would be in terms of decibels between 500 and 700. I would think there'd be very much of a difference.
Comment? No, there wouldn't be. You have to keep in mind that one S unit is quadrupling your power. So in other words, if you had a 100 watt transmitter and you were talking to your friend and he said you have an S signal strength of S4, and if you quadrupled that, if you powered it up to 400 watts, it would only go up one S unit. So going less than a half, it would be a fraction of an S unit. You know, I mean, in some cases, it might be just enough to make the difference between unintelligible and intelligible. But as far as the S meter is concerned, you probably wouldn't notice the difference.
My thoughts exactly. So when you use your 1.3, are you getting two S units out of that or not quite?
Well, it depends on, the output that you drive into it. One of the nice things about expert systems is that it's designed by a lunatic. So the gain is not FCC legal. They put an attenuator on mine. But you can, if you talk to them nicely, you can get it without the attenuator. So without the attenuator, you can fully drive this amplifier using 10 watts. So 10 watts in and 1.3 kilowatts out. That's a heck of an increase.
That is. So what are you using to drive it right now? 20, 25?
Yeah, again, because it has an attenuator on it, and I'm only operating it at low power of 500 watts. So it comes out to be approximately 20 watts of driven power.
Not bad.
No, it's like I said, it's very effective, and I've had it for, I think, 8 years now, and knock on wood, it's one of my most trouble-free components.
That's good. Quality and, proper engineering is always important.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really looked into the guts of it. It's kind of a cliche to say, but Italian products tend to be prettier. You know, you can see that in cars and clothes and all kinds. If there's one thing you get out of Italian manufacture, it's excellent aesthetics. And it's good craftsmanship as far as I'm concerned, my experience. But it's an attractive-looking linear amplifier. And offhand, I can see people listening and saying, who the hell cares what it looks like? Yet, the company that made my radio, Flex Radio, made some arrangement with a Middle East, an East European manufacturer. I think it was their first time or something, and it was the ugliest linear amplifier known to mankind. They immediately kind of went back there and explained to them design aesthetics, and it's a little weird looking, the Flex Radios. I think it's Power Genius or something, but it's a lot prettier than it once was. So you can build a pretty linear or an ugly linear. And the Expert Systems is, it doesn't have too much in the way of flourishes, but it's a very aesthetically pleasing design, I find.
Understood. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Brian. Anytime.
Is there anyone out here with us?
Kilo Charlie 9, Romeo Delta Sierra. KC9 RDS, Mike, Billings, Montana. And I would like to know, with a 27-inch Stinger, a Wilson that has a coil, the Wilson 2 meter specifically is a magnet antenna, ground plane. And I want to tune it instead of, it's not a multi-band or a dual band. It's just 2 meter, and I want to cut the stinger down to a certain length to tune it for 434, 400. Do you have any suggestions?
Okay, Mike, one second. Let me finish up with Brian, okay?
Standing by.
Okay, Brian. I think Wesley wanted to say something on the subject. Wesley, did you have something to say about Brian's question?
Well, you kind of jumped from subject to subject at the beginning. That was the amplifier for the 220 versus 120 out. At some point, the 440 is being used in the United States also. So the only difference is the current on the wires or in the outlet. So you double the voltage that you make the current twice smaller. And that's the only difference for it. As far as the polarization of an antenna, the loop antenna, it depends on the size and the shape of the antenna, but we could say that in a far field, you're not talking about the near field, not far, if the loop is vertically placed, then you have a horizontal polarization, so it means the angle of the radiation in the far field is 90, is at the right angle. So near field response of the small loop can provide polarization at the right angle, the normal field of polarization with the normally expected null in the response being filled in by the near field response. And so the combined response then skew the expected loop antenna pattern while direction finding. It depends which tool you're using for it. But as far as circular polarization, yes, in the loop antenna at certain conditions you can have a circular polarization as well.
Okay, Wesley. Getting back to the linear amplifier, well, yeah, I mean, the difference between using a 240-volt and 120-volt is you're requiring your utility, that circuit, to handle twice the amount of current. And depending upon the efficiency of the linear amplifier, if it's a low-efficient linear amplifier, you're going to need it to supply a heck of a lot more current, which is going to have an effect on that circuit's ability to be used for other devices. So if you use a vacuum tube that's somewhat inefficient, you can't get away quite as much as you can with a solid state that's more efficiently designed. So it requires less current for the switching power supply, and the switching power supply needs to use less current for the LDMOS power module, and that's how you get away with 120 volts and keep it at 1.3 kilowatts. So, okay. Brian, any other comments, questions, answers, what have you?
There was a question about two-meter magnet mount antenna at the time.
Well, we kind of do things one at a time. I wanted to finish up on Brian, and then we'll go to Mike. Mike is the gentleman who wants to shorten his antenna, basically.
I'm just going to go. I have to go ahead and just take care of something. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okay, well, I guess we'll move on, and if Brian has any things, we'll go back there later. So, Mike, the question was that you have an antenna that's resident at the 2 meters, and you'd like to have it resident at 440. And so, you know, I mean, other than kind of do some magic at the base to change to impedance transforming, functionally, you're going to have to, either you're going to have to electrify electronically modify the antenna so its resonance shifts, or you're going to have to mechanically alter it. And the only mechanical alteration you can really accomplish is to snip it. I would suggest that you snip it very slowly because it's easy to cut things and it's very difficult to add some antenna back. I mean, if anyone else has any clever ideas, please feel free to add to them.
If the frequency is too high, if the frequency is too low, you have to increase the length.
Now, Wesley, he said he has a 2-meter resonant antenna. He wants to use it for 440. So the frequency is too low. So he has to shorten it or electronically shorten it.
ZDH with a comment.
Sure, John.
Well, if the antenna is a quarter wave on 2 meters, 144, it's possible it can operate as a three-quarter on 432. In other words, I mean, it wouldn't be the same radiation pattern, but you might get it to be able to accept power as a three-quarter wavelength rather than a quarter wavelength. Go ahead.
Actually, it's not. It's 5/8, and it's 4.5 foot length.
I mean, ultimately, it sort of depends on how non-resonant you're tolerating. You know, you can certainly give it a try. It's not going to ruin anything. Most radios have safety features for things like that. So you can, you know, try it out for a spin, and if it works, congratulate yourself. Otherwise, you're going to have to figure some way of modifying its resonance. There are loads of dual antennas that are designed specifically to operate both at 2 meters and 70 centimeters, but I assume you don't want to spend money on another antenna and that you just like to force this one to do exactly what you need it to do. So, nipping is, it would accomplish it, but I would suggest that you do it in very small segments over a long time rather than, you know, kind of be over enthusiastic, because you can always snip more, but you can't snip less.
All right, I'll see if I have it. KC9RDS. I ordered another brand new Stinger. It's like $23 shipped to me. So I got two brand new Stingers. And I'll use the old one and I'll cut it short sections at a time, exactly like you said. I have a mini 1300 network antenna analyzer, and that's exactly what I was thinking of doing. I talked to another kind of engineer, and he sent me the antenna calculator, but I don't know how to use it properly, and you're supposed to divide it by a certain number. But yeah, so back to what you were saying, I'll just cut it. I have bolt cutters, I have an antenna analyzer, and I'll just go a little bit at a time. Thank you for the information. And I also have, let me reset. I also have a transistor. I have 454s. I was using 1446s and 2879s, 2990s. But there's a new HG transistor out. And I'm using MACOM 454s. They're easier to tune with the combiners on an RF deck. And I got it running at 28,200 to about 28,300 is the solid state that I have it tuned for 10 meters. And I have a switching power supply, which is 80 amps off the 110. and it's very efficient and it works very good. I had one transistor Yaesu amplifier. I shouldn't have got rid of it. It was all band, all mode, and it was pre-tuned. But I'm a firm believer in transistors. Thanks for picking me up and giving me some confidence on just going slow, cutting the steer. KC9RDS, back to net control.
Well, I mean, you're more than welcome, Mikey. I really like... I like switching power supplies. I told a story on the TechNet a couple of months ago that in order to kind of troubleshoot a device, someone advised me to buy a linear wart type of power supply. And those things are heavy, they're expensive, and switching power supplies are so much smaller and lighter. I have a Tenma. This, I think, is about 70 amps, and again, it's worked beautifully for 10 years I've owned it. It's relatively compact, it's relatively light, and it's very efficient. So I'm a big fan. You talk to some old-timers, and I understand the early days of switching power supplies were not happy days. The engineers kind of went cheap on the filter systems, which are very important to switching power supplies, and so they were seeing a lot of noise in their shack just from the hash produced from the high speed switching. But I think for the most part, if you don't pinch too many pennies, you can get a very well designed switching power supply that can be run in a shack without any problem. And again, with the linear amplifiers, I just don't have a 220 volt dedicated line for my shack. And in order to get one, I'd have to rip up a lot of masonry. So my solution was a solid-state linear amplifier, and I've never kind of questioned my decision for that.
I'm back.
Okay, we're finishing up with Mike. So wish you good luck, and please come back and tell us how it worked out. And, you know, VNAs are wonderful these days. You know, 20 years ago, I think a VNA sold for $10,000. So no ham in their right mind would own one. If you worked for a company that had one, you might have borrowed it on a Friday night and brought it back Monday morning. But otherwise, you kind of stuck with MFJ's, quote, antenna analyzer, which was not as good as a VNA. So take advantage of those far less expensive VNAs and use them. They take a lot of work away from the exercise of getting things resonant.
Well, thank you guys for your support. And the switching power supply was custom built, and it is filtered. It works great. And it wasn't the earlier versions, but it's an updated, but there's newer ones. But they work great, 220 or 110. And I will come back. I'm going to write this down. This is my first visit to your guys' net, and I appreciate it. Thank you for welcoming me in so graciously. And I'll say 73s, maybe jump in later on. Thank you so much. Back to net control.
Again, you're welcome, Mike, anytime. We're here every Sunday night. Feel free to kind of visit and ask us anything. If I don't know it, maybe someone out there listening can add to it and knows it. So you're always welcome. 73, Mike.
I would only buy a switching power supply nowadays. It makes complete sense, and they've come a very long way.
I would agree with you, Brian, but you can go down to 75 meters and have arguments with guys over it. I still remember one of my first visits to a amateur radio club, and I mentioned how much I like my switching power supply, and I was about to be burnt alive as a enemy of of amateur radio and such. So you know, there are some guys who they were burned many, many years ago, and the scars remain, and they're just not going to give it a second chance, no matter what you tell them. You know, I mean.